I'll take about 8 to 10 pictures, and I'll get in real close and pull back a little bit.
We're at Hallmark at something called a go-see. That's when models go out to meet a business or agency, kind of like an audition. A group of Latino models, men and women, are posing for test photos, just so Hallmark can get to know them.
Great. Okay, so go ahead and turn sideways because we're doing a profile picture. And you don't have to smile for these.
Okay.
And go ahead and face the other way.
When companies want Latino models, they're often looking for brown skin and black hair. But Nicholas Segura, who recruited these models, says Latinos are a lot more diverse than that.
You've got blonde hair, blue-eyed Latinos who don't speak any Spanish at all, but they're very Hispanic and they're very connected to their roots. And you've got those that look like they're African, well, we consider African-Americans, but they're from Cuba. They speak only Spanish and beautiful.
The diversity encapsulated within the Latino experience is one of the big topics for discussion at the annual conference of the National Council of La Raza, taking place in downtown Kansas City this weekend. The name of that organization, La Raza, is interesting, and it's hard to translate, but it might help us get at the complexity of Latino identity. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is Central Standard, and I'd like to start today's show by asking each of our guests to define La Raza, and then we'll jump in from there. Enrique Chi is here from the popular local band Making Movies. Good morning, Enrique.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. So what is La Raza? Define it and then talk a little bit about the meaning of that concept in your life.
I think the translation is, the race. And I was just thinking about that as you were talking before you even asked me. And I actually don't really, I don't remember what the rule is on what's a race or an ethnicity or a national. You know, I know a nationality is different than a race and an ethnicity. So, because I don't think that way, which I think might be good that I don't think that way. And so I think the race is not a great translation of it because that's not the way the word really resonates with Latino people, especially Latino people in the United States. I think it's more like saying our tribe.
Tribe. That's a cool way of thinking about it. We'll get back to you shortly, but I want to go ahead and introduce Celia Reese, who joins us from Una Lucha KC. That's a sister organization for One Struggle KC, an activist group that sprung up in response to Ferguson last fall. Hi, Celia.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for being here. Let's hear your thoughts about La Raza, what it means in general, and then what it means to you.
Well, I want to steal Enrique's answer, but I do want to echo that piece with, you know, ethnicity and race. I don't think I've paid attention to that as much as probably people expect me to. But so then what it means to me specifically, there is no literal translation for it. Raza, I take it as my people, my group of people, and there's a lot of pride in that as well.
So our next guest is Daniel Silva. He's joining us from the Kansas City Chamber of Commerce, where he's the Director of Diversity and Inclusion. Thanks for being here, Daniel.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
We've heard two pretty similar and compelling definitions of La Raza, which sometimes gets translated as the race. But does La Raza carry a different sentiment for you?
Yeah, I think the direct translation obviously is the race, but having worked at NCLR, we always took a look at it as it was coined from a popular poem, and it spoke to La Raza Cosmica, which translates into the cosmic race, which is speaking to the diversity of the Latino people.
Cosmic, that's like a universe.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about why you would think of this group of people as having like cosmic proportions?
I can't speak to that. That was kind of the history that was giving to me. But I agree with the diversity of the Latino population.
With this conversation that our other two guests have said is something that they haven't thought a lot about, is the distinction between ethnicity and race, or ethnicity, race, and nationality. Are those things you think about? And do you think that that would be helpful to discuss?
Yes, absolutely. And I think at times I feel maybe we use it interchangeably as Latinos, although I think we understand that being Latino is an ethnicity. And within that...
How would you define ethnicity?
where you trace your roots from, your ancestry.
And that's different from race in your mind. How?
Well, I know that Latinos have not been classified as a race, as much like African Americans have or Caucasians, even though it is listed on the census checklist or non-white Latino.
I've read that, I mean, there are a lot of different perspectives on the differences between these words, and I think it's pretty hard to pinpoint. But some of the things I've heard is that a race is how other people see you, whereas an ethnicity is how you see yourself. Some people make a distinction between like biology and geography or something like that, or biology and culture. Do those differences matter to you? Do they resonate?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that. Do you know which one is tied to biology and which one's tied to culture?
When people make that distinction, they usually say that race has to do with biology and that ethnicity has to do with culture.
There's like a new scientific study that when somebody migrates to a different part of the world, even if their genetic pool should be identical, like let's say like my little sister was born in the United States, but my brother and I were born in Panama, that genetically her by being born here is genetically different than us.
Really?
That you start altering over the course of generations. The literal gene pool and your genetic features change based on your environment. So that's where, you know, for me personally, I think there's probably some merit to defining these terms and having some ideas for them. I don't know where that is useful, maybe in a classroom, I'm not sure. But for me, it becomes way less, it almost becomes kind of like a useless debate. Like, I think maybe just trying to figure out what your culture is seems more valuable than your genetic pool. I don't know.
What do you think, Celia?
You know, I've been I've worked in different community organizations and been a part of maybe seeing different grant proposals. And I think that when we're talking about race and ethnicity, the scary part is that for a lot of us, we are being categorized into these two groups because of money.
Because of money?
Money.
Talk about that.
It's sad to say, and my heart is running like crazy because we don't talk about these things a lot. But, you know, all of us, when we're talking about our genetics, we can come back and say, you know, that my blood goes back to Guanajuato, it goes back to Michoacán. But for someone else here, my blood doesn't matter. The skin tone matters. And because that way they can say that they helped a good percentage of blank.
So it's a matter of that there's some capital, there's some currency in terms like diversity or like reaching populations that you can check off on a box.
Correct. And that's the scary part when, you know, when you're filling out, you know, if we're talking about race and ethnicity, it is included, you know, on the census. And you see maybe strides or, you know, or growth or progression in different communities or different procedures, institutions. But, you know, do those terms and those classifications, are they carrying across to the school enrollment form in a small elementary school? You know, it's not a universal approach that our families are seeing. So in one area, I have to, and I say that in quotations, have to pick white because there's no other option. But if I go over into this local neighborhood cool initiative, then I can put myself as Mexican is even an option.
So you can go from being very specific to being so generalized as to almost be invisible, maybe.
Correct.
Daniel, you work for the Chamber of Commerce and you work in an initiative for diversity and inclusion. What do you think of what you're hearing from Celia?
Well, I think it's important, you know, for organizations like the Chamber of Commerce that are very prominent and influential to definitely pay attention to diversity and inclusion in terms of providing an opportunity to begin to start to level the playing field, you know, provide access for communities, underserved communities, communities of color, whether they be Latino, African American, Asian. I think the work that we take on hopefully is addressing some of that. At the Chamber, we really try to use the Chamber's platform to elevate the business case for diversity. And I think obviously, the Latino business case for diversity is very prominent now, especially with the recent news with Donald Trump and corporations taking a stand.
When you talk about a business case for diversity, mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Well, I'll just focus on the Latino population. As it stands right now, the Hispanic market is at $1.3 trillion, which is larger than the economy of all but 15 countries in the world. And so when we're talking about engaging the Latino market and what that means and the implications, I think folks, communities, organizations, post-secondary institutions that are not preparing themselves to engage with this demographic are not going to be ready.
So you're talking about making the case to institutions that it is in their best interest to care about the populations you're trying to serve.
Agreed. And again, I think our message, and we all know it here, engaging underserved communities of color is the right thing to do. But the business case is it's also the very economically viable thing to do.
So then when you hear someone like Celia saying that it kind of hurts a little bit to feel like that her skin tone matters for capital reasons, is that something that you can reconcile with this idea of making a business case for diversity?
Well, I think obviously, and my skin tone is very similar to Celia's. Definitely, that the skin tone I think we can't get away from. I think being categorized at times is tough. Being invisible at times is always tough. I think for us at the chamber and from where I sit, any opportunity to uplift our community should be acted upon.
What did you guys think of that photo shoot we heard at Hallmark? Do you feel like their search for Latino models signals progress and inclusion for Latinos? Or is there something in it that makes you, maybe a little squeamish?
Yeah, there's something a little bit uncomfortable since our, being a musician, you are one foot an artist and on the other foot you're an entertainer. There's definitely this like line where, you see businesses start to want entertainers that are of color or of some, of Latino roots, which is good. It's good because you get more work and that's like a progress in a way, but it is a little bit uncomfortable. And I think when I was listening to them speak, I was reminded of this phrase that our manager and I always talk about. I think this is very true in the music business, but it's also true elsewhere.
And your band, just to remind people, is Making Movies.
Yeah, our band is called Making Movies. And people only do things for love and for money. There's almost no exclusions to that, me included. So I'm either doing something because I love it, or I'm doing something because it's giving me a paycheck. And when we look at these businesses, as they you're talking about the economically viable decision to market towards a Hispanic community or to be conscious or be sensitive to those needs. I don't think we can make everyone love the Hispanic communities, but if we're going to get their support because it makes sense, well, fine, let's take it. It's kind of like with our band. Like if, sometimes we get an opportunity because someone loves us, and that's really special. And sometimes we get an opportunity because it just makes sense business-wise. And you know what? How can I say no to that? So I agree. I think however we can do whatever, however it uplifts the communities, let's use it, whether it's for because of love or for money.
Celia, how did you feel when you heard that the sound from that photo shoot?
I think it's our responsibility as a community to be true to ourselves. Let's say that there is money involved, or there is an expectation that we be that hot Latino or whatever stereotype that people have. Once we're given a place to speak or a place to be seen, it's our responsibility to be absolutely honest with ourselves. And so then if it's, you want a Latino, let me show you what a Latino looks like. You want a Latino, I'll show you what I look like. And I think that's what we can provide. So if there's a space, if there's an opportunity, let's not be nervous about showcasing how awesome of a community we really are.
Daniel, what are your thoughts?
I wrote down two words, and these are words that we use all the time when engaging corporations. It's about being meaningful and intentional when you're engaging with communities, I think. Having a picture of a Latino on the cover of your magazine is one thing, but actually supporting that community is another thing. I think corporations like Hallmark are making tremendous strides in that space and have been very supportive of underserved and communities of color, for sure.
In what way? In what way has Hallmark done that?
Well, they're a title sponsor, for sure, at the Chamber for Diversity and Inclusion. And I think they've gotten to that point because we're beginning to demonstrate that we are definitely trying to be meaningful and intentional in engaging minority and women-owned business owners.
Enrique Chi, I want to turn to you and hear more of your story. You are, as you've mentioned, a first-generation Panamanian immigrant. When did your family come here from Panama?
I was 6 years old when we moved here. We're supposed to only come for 4 years, but life happened. And we stayed. My parents just moved back to help take care of my grandparents.
What brought you and what was your initial experience like?
My mom brought me and with my dad. But my initial experience was scary and weird in that we landed in Kansas City because my parents met a few families from here. And my parents are very religious and they felt at peace that, you know, they had a higher calling, that this was the right decision for the next 4 years. So Kansas City, we had no family here, but they had these friendships. And somebody told them about a ESL teacher in Lee Summit, Missouri. And my parents, that you could have said any word, it didn't mean anything to them. And this ESL teacher was amazing. And she helped break down that fear. Like, I felt very uncomfortable anywhere outside of my house except for her classroom. And so I think that my first taste of America, and when I look back, she passed away this year, and it didn't hit me till this year that really I think she shifted my perception of American people. Because I didn't grow up with an animosity towards it. And even there were some prejudices and a little bit of, you know, of those kind of like challenges as a kid. But because she was my first experience with someone and she was so caring and open and giving, and she didn't speak any Spanish, but she taught me how to speak English. That really played a huge shift in my perception of people, which I'm really grateful for.
Have you, you've chosen to stay in Kansas City. How do you feel like Kansas City has been for you and your family?
I think it's been good. We've developed a new family here. And I was talking to Matthew on the phone yesterday, your producer.
He's the producer of the show.
Yeah. And I was talking about that I actually feel more at home with immigrants than I do with Panamanians. Or Americans, really.
So immigrants, no matter where they've come from, that they share that experience.
That shared experience is more my tribe or my race than being a Panamanian. And it dawned on me when I was 12 years old, and I was like, you know, right in the peak of pimples and hormones. And I hated, you know, my identity here. I hated being the weird one. And, you know, I probably would have hated that no matter where in the world I was or what my situation was because that age in my life. But when I went back to Panama in my head that summer vacation, I can't wait to be home with my people where I'm a Panamanian and I'm not the weird one. I got to Panama and my cousins and my friends and everybody was like, "Hey, gringo, this is my American cousin." I'm like, "I'm not your American cousin. I was born right up the street from you. What are you like? I'm your Panamanian cousin, but I was the American at that point." And that was a shock. And at the time, I didn't like that shock. And now I've realized that is my identity, and it's neat that I can navigate both cultures. I understand both intimately, but really I identify the most with people that have had to straddle two cultures, whether that's Venezuelan American, Mexican and American culture, or it could be, you know, Ukrainian and American culture. I find this bond with them.
Have you in Kansas City or elsewhere felt any kind of like disconnect between the way you relate to your own heritage or your own background and what other people kind of project onto you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if we're talking about Kansas City specifically, I think Kansas City is a little slow to the punch on some things. And when you go to cities that are much more integrated culturally, Kansas City is still super segregated. It is. I spent more time outside of Kansas City this year than inside of Kansas City. And when I come back, it is black and white, the difference. If you're in Austin, Texas, or San Antonio, or Los Angeles, or Bakersfield, a tiny town, you know, it's not this segregated. The families are all intermixed with the neighborhoods. Here, the neighborhoods are drawn and big black lines. This neighborhood is for black people. This neighborhood is for brown people. This neighborhood is for white people. And it's kind of disappointing, you know, honestly. And I didn't realize how segregated Kansas City is. And I use those terms to be kind of crass about it, that it's just not okay anymore.
Does it just feel crass to you?
It feels crass to me that there are distinct lines.
I've noticed what you're talking about, and I wonder how you think that affects the way people interact with each other or interact with you. I mean, it kind of feels to me sometimes like relating to someone of a different race or background is like too much of an event. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that in this city, the occasions are too rare where the cultures are getting mashed up together. And, you know, this is kind of a different side of the coin. When I look at the first generation immigrant communities in Kansas City, the Mexican American community specifically, because it's the biggest one out of the Latino or Hispanic ethnicity, I know the kids that we've met in those communities, they've never seen the other parts of Kansas City other than their neighborhood. It's impressive. And so the responsibility is not just on, you know, all these Americans that have excluded people from their neighborhoods, which is a real thing. I mean, it's a real thing that Brookside was advertised. Like, if you're more than a third black, Hispanic, or Jew, you can't buy a house there.
Racial covenances.
Yeah. And, you know, even though those aren't still there, in practice, they're still there. Those cultures don't live in those neighborhoods. And it worked. The plan worked. It's not just the responsibility of those communities. It's also the responsibility of the immigrant communities to be brave enough to interact with other parts of the Kansas City culture. And I was hanging out with this kid that I have mentored over the years, and I took him to go eat Jerusalem Bakery in Westport, and he just never hung out in Westport. He's 18 years old. He lives 3 miles from Westport, and he just never, ever seen Westport.
Talk to me about your band, because you've mentioned young people you've interacted with. I'm guessing that you come into contact with a lot of people through your band. How does music enter the picture for you?
I just mean my life personally?
Yeah.
My dad played guitar, and I fell in love with it. And I fell in love with music. And music, you know, shaped my identity in a lot of ways. And it was my escape as a kid. And I just remember wanting to do what other musicians had done for me, where I would put on my dad's records. He had a pretty good, healthy vinyl collection. So it was all old classic rock stuff that my dad loved, which is weird in Panama for him to love that stuff. And I would push the headphones in as close as I could to my head, because the music never felt close enough, like, because I loved it so much. And so I decided that I wanted to do that for other people, what it did for me. And so I started to create music, and I didn't know what to do. And over the course of time, I realized that I can fit a specific need musically, this combining two worlds of stuff. And the stuff that we're combining is the very Afro roots of Latin culture with everything else that is rock and roll music. And to me, that those aren't so different in their genesis.
We're going to hear more about your music, I hope, later in the show. But after the break, we want to hear your story. Are you a part of La Raza? What does Latino heritage mean to you? Call us up now, especially if you have an experience you feel gets overlooked in these discussions. 816-235-2888. Central Standard will return. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's conversation is about the huge range of experiences contained within a large group of people who all identify as Latino. There's this term in Spanish, la raza, which means something like race, but has more of a connotation of maybe a welcoming family, maybe a tribe, maybe my people or roots. What does la raza mean to you? Call 816-235-2888 to join the conversation and to share your story. Our guests are Enrique Chi from the band Making Movies, Celia Reese of Una Lucha KC, and Daniel Silva from the Kansas City Chamber of Commerce. We were just talking about Enrique's observation that at a certain point in his childhood, he felt weird here in Kansas City, and that didn't change as much as he hoped it would when he went back to visit Panama, that he was always kind of feeling a little like the weird one. And I wanted to get our other guests' responses to that observation. Celia?
I think that the being weird part is a thing that just, you know, kind of struck me the most as he was speaking. I'll say my age. I was born in 79, born in the east side of Kansas City. My parents were one of several families that were coming in from central Mexico. El Derramadero, Guanajuato is the place. And so then it was still a very small community. And so then if you wanted to have fun, you went to a quinceañera. If you wanted to have friends, go to the baptism. You know, if you wanted to go somewhere the weekend, go to church that was just literally down the street. And so then it was very much of a bubble community. And it was difficult. And even to this date, like, I still try to figure out, where am I supposed to fit? Because there's a constant push and pull of, okay, I look brown, I speak Spanish, I also speak English. You say you're Mexican, but aren't you born here? Or if I say I'm American, no, but really, where's your family from? And I've heard some very coy questions saying, do you have family here? Do you have family in other country? And it's just this constant, you belong to them, you belong to them. And so then as you're growing up, and so then again, we were in that bubble. And then going to school, I think we had a very diverse schooling, where it was elementary school was Catholic school with, what, maybe three of us speaking Spanish, and it was me and my sisters. Then we went on to high school in Independence, went 1 year, three people spoke Spanish, me and my sisters. And then we went down in South Kansas City, and mostly Black.
I think something that you mentioned that kind of intrigues me is this idea of a coy line of questioning and people expressing interest and curiosity about something that they're picking up on from you, but they're not comfortable asking about it. And I wonder if you are comfortable being asked about it, or how you think is sort of, I don't know, maybe like a more natural way for the stories and details of your own personal history to emerge.
I don't think I have the best intuition, but I think I try to play with it as much as I can. I think you can really tell the sincerity in some people. When they say, oh, you know, I don't know, you can just, for me personally, I feel like I can just kind of tell a difference. I've had people say, oh, you have such a pretty color. And maybe that would seem offensive, you know, in a different setting if they said, oh, you have a pretty color.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell. And so then if I sense that warmth, if I sense some sort of sincerity, I was like, just do it. Talk about yourself. And if I feel that, oh, I travel a lot in rural Kansas, and there's some things that I kind of keep to myself.
I think I've gotten us a little off track from this question of feeling like the weird one. And I do really want to hear, Daniel Silva, your feelings about that.
Yeah, and there's actually a saying in Spanish that I learned a long time ago, and it's called ni de aquí, ni de allá, not from here or from over there. You know, by my makeup, you know, my father's from Mexico and my mother's from Guatemala. I was born and raised in Chicago in a Puerto Rican neighborhood. So definitely got a good mix of
Humboldt Park.
Yeah, Humboldt Park area, Logan Square area.
Have you been to Nelly's?
I don't think so.
No, Nelly's Puerto Rican food in that neighborhood just kills me. It's so good.
And so in terms of makeup, I think, you know, and we were just talking about this during the break, I think, you know, whenever I've traveled to, you know, Mexico or Guatemala, the feeling there is very much like Enrique had, is, you know, I'm not from there. I'm not Mexican or Guatemalan. I'm American. And to that end, my Spanish doesn't really reflect a Central American Spanish, Guatemalan Spanish, or Mexican Spanish. It's kind of more of a mashup of a Mexican, Guatemalan, Puerto Rican Spanish when I speak. So I like to say I can speak all three of those Spanishes, whether it's Mexican, Guatemalan, or Puerto Rican.
So you're trilingual
and a little
in
bit
Spanish.
Of Cuban if I have to. yeah, but it does feel a little weird at times having to kind of straddle that line. I think maybe all of us have learned to be a chameleon in some sense. We try to be very adaptable to any situation you might find yourself in.
Do you think, I mean, you talked about growing up in Chicago, and I wonder if you have observations from having made that kind of transition from a city like Chicago to Kansas City, if you can sort of identify some some real particular aspects of being Latino in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And not just in the U.S.
Absolutely. And I think, again, you know, Chicago being such a big city, and you just rub up against so many different cultures. You know, the Puerto Rican neighborhood where I grew up was right next door to the Polish neighborhood. And so I grew up loving Polish food and Puerto Rican food and Mexican food and Greek food and Italian. All of those cultures were readily available to me, and I had the fortune of going to a school that was very diverse and very integrated. I agree with Enrique. I think we have a long way to go here in Kansas City, but I think that's also an opportunity. I think there is an opportunity for us to work together to try to unite folks as much as possible. At the Chamber, you know, we do a lot of work with young professionals, and we've worked hard to engage diverse young professional groups and provide a platform for them to connect to one another and just get to know one another on a very surface level, you know, maybe over a cocktail or two, but get folks talking to one another. And hopefully through some of that organic relationship building will come positive collaborations that will impact Kansas City in a good way.
I love the optimism in what you're saying. I also kind of recognize that there's something, I think we're all kind of trained to do this professionally, to see challenges as opportunities. Are there parts of these challenges that are just challenges that are like, this is a huge bummer to me?
I mean, it's tough, you know, and I think I'll speak for myself. I mean, there are times where I think some of the racial division and tension really weighs on me. And it's tough because as much as I want to reach out and touch others, if you will, that's not to say that they want to reach out and touch me back, right, or collaborate with me. But I think I've come to the point where I can only be this way and act in a positive way and try to surround myself with those like-minded individuals. And for the folks that would have negative things to say, I try to really not work with them.
I'm going to turn to a caller now. We've got Andres in Kansas City at 816-235-2888. Let's talk with Andres. What's going on, Andres?
Hi, how's it going? I'm actually from Una Lucha Casey myself with Celia. So, hi, everybody.
Hello.
I just wanted to comment about the question about La Raza and what it means. I think that term is really kind of more specific towards the Mexican community, since it comes out of 70 years ago, when this piece called La Raza Cosmica by Jose Vasconcelos, mm-hmm. Talking about the triracial identity of Latino people. Well, there was no Latino term back then, but I think even that term can divide within itself, since Latino is a pan-ethnicity. You know, you have Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Mexicans, and different people. But even within the Mexican community itself, the division with Chicanos and Mexicans, or Mexican-American, depending how people identify themselves. So I wanted to, you know, ask what people thought about that. Because I identify, like, depend on different contexts. I'll identify as a Latino when I'm around other Latinos, or like, you know, as a term of solidarity when, you know, confronted with like issues affecting Latin America or something, you know, like it'll affect me because I'm a Latino. When it comes to issues like immigration, I'll say, you know, I'm a Mexican, you know, and this is dear to me because mixed status family I come up in. But I also identify as a Chicano, because I wasn't born in Mexico. I was raised here. And I mean, I just, you know, I know some people either are born in Latin America, but also raised here in Kansas City, how they view those terms. You know, I think Chicano is mostly delegated to people of Mexican descent, but also, you know, what those identities mean to you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm hearing a question about internal divisions and whether those feel like divisions or like something else.
I think, you know, they're just two key words, internal and divisions. It is difficult. You know, the chameleon effect, you know, where you're like, you know, it's a constant internal battle. And I'll be honest, where I say still is, you know, to this age right now, I try to figure out, you know, what word should I use? And then there comes a point where you just say, this is me. This is me. This is Celia. And you know, actually, I'm going down to Mexico very soon. And I'm going to apply for my Mexican citizenship because I'm honestly tired, really, really tired of having to say American, Chicano, Mexican-American. No, you know what? I have my American, you know, citizenship, and I have my Mexican citizenship now. So call me Mexican or call me American. I got them both covered.
Okay. So, yeah, and you're taking action to make sure that the words that you want to use represent you. Is that most of the motivation, or is there more to it?
There's more to it where I love Mexico, and I try to go down as often as I can. I say things get really difficult once you become an adult and you have bills to pay. But, you know, if you can go down and stay connected, you know, as long as I still have family there, which they're still family, I'm not going to be a fake person and say, my grandma, my grandpa, and not actually say hello and give them a hug.
I wonder what the rest of you think about this idea of this terminology possibly, I don't know, cutting those divisions even deeper?
Well, you know, this made me think, I've had three thoughts that are kind of connected as I listened to what everybody was saying. The chameleon, I think it was Daniel who said it first, the chameleon element and what this caller was kind of talking about is, and based on different situations, he'll use a term or identify in a certain way in order to be more effective to voice his opinion or to give up, to have a voice. It's like, well, I'm going to use this term so that way I can connect with people on what I'm trying to express to them. And I think the chameleon thing has danger to it because I think being a social chameleon is one of the traits of being a sociopath. Like, if you lose your mind, you're amazing at just being, you know, because it's just transparent. You're not really yourself ever, and you can fake, American Psycho, you know, type stuff. Like, it's actually like a psychological problem if you go in too deep with it.
If you don't know what's really you, or mm-hmm. if you're actually being deliberately manipulative in some harmful way.
Right. But it has its dangers, and it is confusing, especially as a young person when everything's confusing, no matter what your situation is. But once you become an adult, and if you can realize that there's a ton of beauty to this, to being able to navigate with different kinds of people, and it's kind of this dance that you do. And I've luckily been able to have a lot of experiences with people that are really free with these. Their cultural identity, and they find this freedom where it's that genuine, you know, they might be from a different culture than me, but that genuine excitement, like, how do you guys do this? Let me show you how we did it in this country. And actually, I met these Mexicans and they do it this way. And whether that's, it could be simple things like a meal or it can be really deep things like religion or family values.
Central Standard will be right back. There's still time to make sure your experience is included in this discussion. Just call us up at 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. Daniel Silva, welcome back to Central Standard.
Thank you for having me.
Enrique Chi, good morning.
Good morning.
And Celia Ruiz.
Good morning.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and we're talking about diversity within the Latino population here in Kansas City. We'll get right back to your calls, but first, I want to talk about Kansas City a little bit. I'm curious about what you guys would think progress for Latinos in Kansas City would look like. I'll start with you, Daniel.
Wow, big question, loaded question. I think for me, from where I sit, through my involvement, not just with the Chamber, but young Latino professionals and different organizations, what I would really like to see is for us as a collective people, really flex our muscle, if you will, unite, rally, get more Latinos elected into office, position Latinos to be in positions of power and influence, to make decisions that positively impact Kansas City, which is tough, though, I think, and we were talking about this earlier. When you start to think about the spectrum of Latinos here in Kansas City, whether they're immigrants, newly arrived immigrants, or third, fourth, and fifth generation Latinos, those folks don't necessarily always see eye to eye or even know each other. And so when I say ideally I would like to see, more of our folks working together, I think there is a challenge there as well.
Let's talk about that, I mean, diversity of experience, that generational diversity.
I think that it's interesting that the older generation immigrants and people who have maybe been here for a long time and feel more Americanized, they have a culture clash with each other and they don't collaborate. And I would agree with Daniel that I think that when you said collective muscle, that if I wanted to see a change in Kansas City, I would want to see more of the different communities working together as a whole to benefit each other. And I've experienced it on a very small microcosm. There's this group of Puerto Ricans that have adopted me. They're Puerto Rican whenever I'm with them. And they've taught me, they brought me a Puerto Rican guitar that's specific to Puerto Rico, and I learned how to play it. I'm probably the only guy in town who knows how to play this Puerto Rican guitar. And they invite me to their events, and I know how to make their food now, right? So that if you think culture, if you know their music, their vibe and their food, you know their culture. I wish that would happen just on a bigger scale, you know, where the communities would just interact and play together a little more. Like you said, where they maybe meet on just an organic relationship, and that would breed actual social change in the long run.
Well, let's hear from one of our callers. We've got Tony from Leawood on the line. Hi, Tony.
Hi. I'm in the parking lot of the Rosary in Leawood, actually. But my experience is totally different. I came to this country in 1961 from Havana, Cuba, as a political refugee, and our family, I don't even remember learning to speak English. I was speaking Spanish one day, and the next day I'm speaking English. Our family was accepted immediately into a Jewish community in Miami, and I don't know, maybe it has something to do with our skin color. We're white. We have green and blue eyes and light brown hair. So I'm from Cuba, but I just think of myself as an American, and I've never really participated in any kind of, you know, Hispanic events. I just think that people from Hispanic cultures should try to become more American and not be so different. I don't know if that's horrible to say that or not, but that's how I've led my life, and I'm perfectly happy and content. Thank you.
Well, thanks for that call. I guess that's an interesting question of, I guess he feels as though he has a choice in whether he is setting himself apart or not. Is that something that you feel like is a choice you have, Celia?
I think I personally don't have that choice, but I think that everyone should have the opportunity to make that choice. I'm thinking, you know, if someone wants, you know, if there's a dark-skinned, short girl, lesbian girl from Northeast Kansas City who wants to feel accepted and integrated into a community that looks nothing like her, she should be able to have that opportunity. If she doesn't want it, that's okay too. The opportunities should exist. We're talking about the divisions, and we're talking about generational divisions. And generational divisions also comes back to the different waves of immigration, you know, because there could have been, you know, there could have been in the 80s when there was amnesty, there was a good group of immigrants that came into the community. And they are, you know, besides the because they came in that period, they have absolutely different experiences than someone who's coming into the 2000s. The opportunity should be given to those people. But to automatically exclude a community because of their skin color, because of their language, and those things happen because of economics. It happens. You know, Enrique, you mentioned that you had one of your friends or there in the neighborhood that hadn't gone out to Jerusalem Cafe. You know, when we were younger, we were driving by the plaza, and I remember being told that's for white people. So did I have that opportunity to say, Celia, if you want to go in there, go ahead. Go get lost in that store. That didn't happen. You know, so if someone has the opportunity and they make the conscious choice to say, I can have a little bit of this, a lot of this, go for it.
So how people feel, you want more people to feel free to make that choice for themselves. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes. You know, Daniel, you were mentioning about, you know, progress and working collectively. Which I absolutely agree. And you mentioned about that micro level, you know, what is it that we can do? You know, you know, within our communities. And I think that's how we integrate and we get that progress happening. When we can really give tools to our community members, to our families, where they feel empowered to maybe stray a little bit away from their neighborhood, to say, you know what, I can go to college, you know, or, hey, I know a musician who went all around the entire world, or, you know, or this guy, he always dresses so nice in a suit and tie, and he goes out to these
and
cool
she's pointing
places.
To Daniel right, right now.
To Daniel over here on my side today. Over here. Yeah, you look good. You know, but I think if we truly give resources and opportunities to our immigrant community, because the question was referring to our immigrant community, let's give them the opportunity and the resources to progress.
Daniel, I'm seeing you scribble a lot of notes, so I know you've got something to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to the caller's question, I think, and my personal opinion as anyone that is here in this country is absolutely trying to live the American dream, and how folks go about it definitely is different. I think for someone like me, you know right away from looking at me that I am Latino. There is no blending or masking that. I think my own personal experiences through college and into professional life have always found me being one of very few Latinos in the spaces that I'm operating in. And with that comes certain challenges, you know, whether it's having to interact with folks who may have never met an educated Latino, and having to interact with them, or being the voice when there is...
What happens in those interactions? I mean, how do you know that that's happening?
You know, it just depends. And to Celia's point, I think you can get a feel for it. You know, I think I have been told, you know, you're pretty articulate for a Latino person, and that can yep. throw someone Back. For a loop. You know, I think... Is English your first language? Because you do speak it well, and it's actually not. I spoke Spanish first. But I think when you hear those types of comments, you know, those are kind of hard to deal with. But I think in my eternal optimism, I try to use those as learning opportunities. And, you know, if someone has had a stereotype of a Latino in their minds, hopefully I can break that stereotype for them.
Enrique?
I just have one thought that's tied to the caller and what Daniel just said. I second everything that you just said, Daniel. And I think philosophically, and this goes into, you know, opinions, the space of opinions, but I don't think that any culture is intrinsically better than any other culture. And I don't think anyone's life experiences are really that comparable to other people. And when I think it becomes foolish to make this divide that they're like being a Latino is better, or being a more Americanized is inherently better. I think in an indigenous culture or a super modernized culture, it's just their experience. And I don't believe there's a way to measure that on a scale of better or worse. And so I think the answer, you know, for me is found in like just appreciating that other people do things differently and being open to that idea. That's where there's true freedom, and that's where the beauty is in. And so then I think that solves a lot of these problems. I just feel like a lot of people have very staunch opinions about this is a better way to live your life, and I think that's foolish.
You know, you mentioned earlier that you had been somewhat adopted, as you put it, by a Puerto Rican group of people in your neighborhood, I think you said, and that you wished that would happen on a bigger scale. So I guess my question for you, if the answer is just to interact more as individual human beings, how did that come about, and is there anything we can learn from it?
I think it came about from, you know, making a connection with a friend who had the same idea, where when I talk to Daniel, I don't look at him as like this Guatemalan Mexicano-American. It's like he's just a person, and he has his ideas and his experiences. And people that have had to experience different cultures maybe have easier tools to lift those blinders off. And that's what I think that's the same vibe that Celia has described too. You can sense when someone is asking you those questions and they're coming from a place of my way of doing things is better than yours, but I'm going to be polite and ask. Or they're coming from a place of, hey, I'm just curious. You're another human being. Tell me about what is it? How was your experience on this planet? Because none of us know what any of this means. We just all have our own little experience. We didn't pick where we were born.
Celia, the organization you come from is Una Lucha KC. If you think about things you're fighting for, we're on our way out, but what are just some of the things you'd say you're fighting for?
I'm going to say on the grassroots level, really, really building up our people, really providing those resources where they can and they have the opportunity to make those choices, both on a legal level, on a social level, economic level. Our families truly need these resources that are available. They just seem to be a little bit far away.
Time is up for today's Central Standard. If you're interested in information on the conference for the National Council of La Raza happening this weekend in Kansas City, check out our website, kcur.org. We've got an article about it, and all the info should be there. Celia Reese, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you this morning. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
Daniel Silva, thanks so much to you, too.
Thank you.
And Enrique Chi, really interesting discussion. Thanks for sharing your story.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
To listen back to this conversation and share it with your friends, go to kcur.org/centralstandard later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, we've been thinking about the Ford plant in Clay Como. It got us wondering whether Clay Como is a company town. Join that discussion tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Peggy Lowe brought us some sound from a photo shoot at Hallmark. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date.